That's why when I try to sync it, it won't.
Okay, we're on Yud Aleph Amid Aleph. We are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines from the top. Omer Le Abaye. Just finishing up this sugya. We'll take 5, 10 minutes, and we start the next short sugyas. A bunch of short sugyas coming up over here. And let's just review the notes inside for a minute. Okay. Let's take it one back one. Sugya 6. Okay. We're over here. Sugya 5. The central issue was who suffers any loss in value of the carcass from the time of damage until the payment. In other words, we know that the carcass is when a person's animal damages another animal, there's two ways you think to pay. Either you just pay the value of the animal $100, or no, we say the carcass has a value. That carcass is retained by the nizak, the one who gets damaged, and the damager pays the difference. That's how we paskin. That was from the previous sugya, which you see in the resolution before sugya 5. The damaged property retains the carcass, and the damager pays the difference between the full value of the animal and that of the carcass. The next issue we were dealing with was, okay, but the carcass, once the animal is killed, it can depreciate in value by the time you take it to court until you sell it. And then there's a loss of the carcass at that point. Who has to sustain the loss of the carcass? Is it the original owner of the animal? So it comes out, let's say the carcass at the time of death was worth 25. The damager pays 75. But by the time the carcass is brought to court, it goes down to 15. So do we say that the mazik pays another 10 to make up for the 10, the carcass is going down? Or do you say, no, he only pays the 75, and the damagee sustains the loss of the 10? So that was the issue. So this was a question of Rav Kahana and Rav Chizkiya. He was saying, we can go past that. We can go to point six. We thought there was a machlokas tanoim about that issue of who sustains the loss. And we move on to source number 9, which was teaching us a brisa, according to Abba Shol, that was saying he'll return money to the owner of the carcass. Teaches the owner of the pit must take the carcass out of the pit. But everybody agreed that the victim suffers the loss. So we said that the victim A has the carcass. We also say everyone says the victim suffers the loss. That was the point. This until now. I'm just reviewing quickly. The victim suffers the loss. There was a machlokes as to who's obliged to pull the animal out and bring it to court. Who's responsible on that end? So there's three issues. Who does the carcass belong to? Belongs to the nizik. So the mazik only pays the difference. Who sustains the loss of the carcass? The nizik does. He sustains the loss of the carcass too. So we want to get that carcass to Bezdin as fast as possible. The third issue is who has to make sure that the carcass goes to Bezdin? Who has to schlep it out? That was a machlokes, Abba Shol and the Tanakama that we ended off with last week. And we brought a support to it from a brisa, which source number 9 says, others say he'll return money to the owner and the carcass. That pasuk teaches that the owner of the pit must take the carcass out of the pit, meaning the damager has to take it out. That's a belief where we ended last week. So it comes up the damager has to take the animal out of the pit. He's got to bring it to Bezdin. That is the brisa supporting Abba Shol's position. So now the Gemara is going to ask a question. This is where we're up to right now. And that's the Gemara right over here. Amar le Abaye le Rava.
So Rabbi, just to go further.
Yeah.
If the damager delays in getting out of the pit to Bezdin, and the carcass drops in value in that period of time, does he suffer that loss of value?
You would think he should.
Right.
You would think he should. He's got to get the owner to say, start so schlepping it, man.
So the owner
and he could go to the court and say, you know, guys took too much time.
So the owner only loses the value of the carcass from the time it's delivered to the base din? Or
yeah, that it could, further, it could, even just normal circumstances can take a few hours, whatever, to get a truck, this and that. Takes time.
Bad weather, maybe take 2 days or something to get out of the
place. Yeah, that already, that's his loss, but if the guy is being negligent and taking it out, that's already the damager's fault over there.
Isn't more than a day or so going to be like totally toit? It's not going to be worth anything?
Well, it's whatever it is. As long, the guy has to act, you call CAA to get a tow. Right? Sometimes you're lucky, they come in a half an hour. Sometimes it's 5-6 hours. What if there's a lot of oxen that got gored that day? So CAA is a busy day. It says we will take you in sequential order. Right? Anyway. So Amar Le Abaye Le Rava. So Abaye asks a question on Rava, who just gave this answer over here. This pasuk teaches us, you're just repeating, you just said, hi, Tarach Navelav, this pasuk that says that the owner of the pit has to schlep the carcass out. Hey, Chidami, explain to me the scenario exactly. All right? So hi. Yeah, so look at this. How do you like? Oh. Hey, Chidami, what is the scenario? What's the case of schlepping it out? Ilema dibibira shavya zuza. If you say the case is that while the carcass is in the pit, it's only worth a zuz. But the aguda shavya arba. But when it's at the edge of the pit, meaning once you've taken it out of the pit, it's shavya arba. It's worth 4 zuz. Because obviously there is a difference in value. If I'm going to sell you a carcass, okay, here's a carcass, okay, can I have it? Yeah, go in the pit and get it out. It's going to cost me money to get it out. So schlep. You can get less money for a carcass if you're selling it as is in the pit and the buyer's got to take it out of the pit. As opposed to at the edge of the pit, meaning out of the pit. So what's the case? Is the case that in the pit it's worth 1 and out of the pit it's worth 4? And that's what the Torah is teaching us, that the damager is required to take it out of the pit. That's what we brought a pasuk to prove that. The damager has to take it out of the pit. I don't need a pasuk for that. Kitarach, when the damager is troubling himself to remove it from the pit, I don't need the Torah to tell me that. Because bidinav sheitarach, he is troubling for his own benefit. Because of course he wants to take it out of the pit or he's going to have to pay more money. So I don't need the Torah to tell me that, do I? That who takes it out, the damager takes it out. Of course the damager, because if he doesn't take it out, he's going to have to pay more money. Because the carcass is worth less. So I don't need the Torah to teach me that. Look at point 11. Look at point 11. Since the damager's liability is reduced by the appraised value of the carcass, it behooves him to raise the carcass and thereby enhance its value. So that can't be the pasuk. It's not teaching us where it goes up in value and take it out. So what is it? What are you going to say? You're going to say no. Amale Rava. So Rava says to Abaye, no, that is not the case. You are right. Lo, no, that's not the case. Tricha, indeed, we need the pasuk. In other words, the question is saying, I don't need a pasuk to tell me that. He says, no, we need a pasuk because this is what it means. It applies in a case of the bebira shav yezuza, that the carcass is worth a zuza in the ground, and also vaguda nami shav yezuza, and the carcass is worth a zuz when it comes out of the ground. It doesn't go up in value at all. It's the same price. Same price. So then the damager will say, why should I bother to schlep it out? I'm not saving any money. No, the Torah says you got to schlep it out anyway.
That means it's not worth anything basically either way. Is that the idea?
It's not anything worth more. It's worth, but it's not worth more. Right? So the damager does not reduce his liability by taking it out of the ground. And therefore the pasuk is saying he has to take it out even though he's not gaining any money. But the Torah is saying he has to take it out. That's what the pasuk is speaking about. The damager has to take out the carcass, even though the carcass does not go up in value by taking it out. Therefore, he has no motivation to take it out. But the Torah says you got to take it out. So to which the Gemara says, hold on, that doesn't seem to make sense.
Doesn't cost anything to take it out of the
That's what Gemara's going to ask now. Umi ika kai gavna, is there such a thing as this? That when you make the object more accessible, it doesn't increase its value? It would, you'd think it would increase the value. You took it out. That there's some schlep, there's some bother. Right? So you, could that be the pasuk? Or says, yep, it could. In, yes, the ha'ami inish, for people say the following rule, and that becomes kind of a business practice. And this is what the word on the street is. Keshura b'masa b'zuza, a beam in town, a beam of wood, when it's sold in town, it's sold for a zuz. Keshura b'dabra b'zuza. And also when you sell a beam in the field, it's also sold for a zuz. The price is the same. What does that mean? Footnote 12 says, even though the latter still requires transfer to town where it'll be used, its market value is not reduced. Interesting. Yeah, well, you know, and I got no commentary on this, no Rashi, not one shred of commentary that says, no, that's the way it is. That's the way the business practices go. And so in other words, in those days, delivery was part of the cost. And therefore the businessman selling had to sustain that problem. And that's the way the business world worked in those days. Today, again, depending on how bad the market is, you know, the guy will either offer you free delivery or not. So therefore, since the cost does not change, therefore we say that the mazik, even though he stands nothing to gain monetarily, but there is effort that's required, we force him to make that effort. And that's what the pasuk is teaching us, that the balabor, the animal is his to the extent that he has to pull it out and he has to take the animal out. And that is the conclusion of this Gemara. So how do we leave things as, try that again. Point number 10. Question of understanding of Abai. What is the case of toil to retrieve it? If it is worth one zuz in the pit and four zuz on the edge of the pit owner toils for his profit. We would not need a pasuk to teach us that. The answer of Rav in the case is, it is worth one zuz in the pit and also on the edge of the pit. Question, is that ever the case? Answer, yes. This is like people say, a beam, I should put that in quotes. No. I don't know why my kids, when they borrow it, they always take the Bluetooth off. Okay. A beam worth one zuz in the city, a beam is worth one zuz in the city and the same as in the wilderness. Okay, so the conclusions of this sugi is, the nizik suffers any loss in value of the carcass from the time of damage until the payment, and two, the mazik must toil to retrieve the carcass. That's what we're up to. So it comes out, whenever you damage another animal, the carcass stays with the nizak, the mazik only has to pay the difference. Any lowering in value, the nizik sustains the loss of the value, but the schlepping it out, even though there's no apparent gain for the mazik monetarily, he must take it out and provide as quickly as possible for the nizak. And we would assume that if he delays and causes it to go down in value, then that is probably the only motivation to get him to get it out of the pit. Okay, that's the end of that. So get questions.
So I'm just troubled with the fact that we're comparing a damage situation with, let's say, a beam in the city and a beam in the wilderness, because in the damage situation, the damager should be responsible to get it out regardless of it increases the market value or not, whether it's in the pit or out of the pit. He's got a responsibility to get it out and get it from the base stand, so he's got an
obligation. Who says?
And Torah says he's got to get it out.
Okay, Torah says.
You want to buy my beam and it's in the wilderness, and I say, Rabbi, it's $10 and $10 for delivery, so it's $20.
But people didn't
do
it. You
want to pick it up, it's $10.
But they didn't do it. That was not the way
it was priced in. Delivery was priced in.
But there's a difference between a damage and your obligation to retrieve the damaged good versus what you charge or don't charge for delivery. I don't see the connection between the two.
Question is the damager benefiting himself by pulling it out of the pit or not, financially?
No, he's fulfilling his obligation to get it out. To get the base in. It doesn't matter.
But no, the question was, do we need a pasuk to teach me this, or would I know it without a pasuk? That was the question. If he's saving money, I don't need a pasuk to tell me he takes it out. That a pasuk is saying, even though he's not saving money and it costs the same, the Torah says you got to take it out because you damaged him. That's so what the Torah is saying.
So we don't need this other piece of wood to beam.
No, because we do. Because if it does cost more to transport, I don't need a pasuk to teach me that the mazik takes it out, because the mazik wants to take it out without a pasuk because he's saving money. I don't need a pasuk to tell me to take it out if he's going to save money.
Right.
He's going to want to take it out. And if he doesn't take it out, he's got to pay the difference. I don't need a pasuk for that. I need a pasuk to say he gets no financial benefit, and that's what the Torah is saying. Since you damaged him, even though there's no money change, you have to. That's what the Torah is teaching us. That is the chiddush.
Yeah.
That is the insight of the Torah, that he has to pay for that to happen, even though there's no financial difference. Even though he wouldn't want to schlep it, the Torah is saying, no, because you damaged, you have to schlep it out. That's the chiddush of the Torah. Even though it costs the same. In those days, there was no increase of cost. It's just a schlep. So it says, the pasuk is saying, you got a schlep because you damaged. That's what he's saying. Okay, now, sugya 6, very nice and easy sugya. We've said now, by damages, we evaluate the carcass. The nizik keeps the carcass, which is not the nizik's best scenario, but that's what Torah says. You know, we would have thought, you know what, make the mazik pay the whole thing. Torah says, no, sorry. Goes, the nizik does lose a bit, in terms of inconvenience, whatever. The mazik pays it. Gemara's now gonna ask, what about other situations? Not in the situation of damaging, in like your animal, your things are damaging. How about other types of scenarios, such as theft or robbery, or things like that, where the robber causes a damage to the animal? We're not talking, regular damages is my cow went and damaged, my pit damaged, whatever. You know, where I was negligent in terms of my shmira, but I wasn't overtly trying to hurt you, as it were. So we said, okay, so since the guy's not such a terrible guy, the nizik has to keep the carcass. What about in other situations where there is a carcass, but not in the context of just good old-fashioned damages? Do we say the same law that the nizik has to keep the carcass or not? That becomes the next issue, and that's the issue, central issue of point 6. For whom, again, for whom do we evaluate the value of the carcass, meaning what other scenarios exist? And how will we deal with those other scenarios? This is a very short and easy sugya. Very short and easy. It should be the next line. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel says the following statement. Ein shamin lo leganev velo legazlin. The courts do not evaluate the carcass to give it to the damagee in a case of thievery or robbery. What's interesting, thievery and robbery? Thievery is when you do it secretly, and robbery means when you do it stick up in front of the guy. Ganef or Goslin, there is no evaluation done at all. Now let's look at point 14. Shmuel taught that judges require a thief or robber to replace the item or animal that he stole with a new one if the animal died or the item was broken. The thief cannot return the carcass or the broken pieces of the item and then pay the difference in value between them and the item that he stole. So this one makes a lot more sense because the thief's a much worse person than a guy who owned an animal that damaged. Certainly then, the thief or robber must bear the loss if the carcass or broken pieces decline in value, because he just has to replace the animal.
Right.
Or the cost of the animal, a live animal. So it's without question, the Gemara's not going to ask who sustains the loss, because
right,
you have to replace the animal with something to sustain. Right? Now, look at this. Although the law is that one may repay damages with any item worth money, as we've already learned, Shmuel is of the opinion that a thief or robber may not do so. Because scripture states with reference to the return of a robbed item, he shall return the loot that he robbed, which teaches that the thief or robber must either return the item itself, or one similar to it, or pay its value in money, which can easily be used by the victim of the theft to replace the item, etc., etc. So this is very much stronger halacha over here, Shmuel is saying, that the guy's got to replace the item or cash. That's it.
He keeps
whatever's broken, all the junk, whatever. It could be a number. It could be a cow that died, furniture that broke, whatever. It could be an accident, but after he stole it, we don't care. So that is clearly what he has to pay. We don't see that. So when are we lenient and we give the damaged party the carcass? Elo in his zaken. Only by damages, as we've been learning until now, as footnote 15 says, as explained, as explained above, we derive from the verse that the carcass shall be his, that we do not evaluate the carcass of a damaged animal, and the mazik only has to pay the difference between the value of the carcass and the original value of the animal that he damaged. We do evaluate the carcass. Okay, that we already learned. Okay, so he's saying new point, we only make the nizak keep the carcass in a case of nizakin, of damages, but not in a case of theft or robbery. Theft or robbery, the thief or the robber replaces the animal, gives the money, he has to keep the carcass, he sustains the loss, and that's it. That's what Shmuel said, and then he added a clause. This is the easy part. Now comes a clause. Va'ani omer, and I personally say, af l'shol, also with a borrower. Now, what does that mean exactly? Also for a borrower. And then he's going to say, let's understand what's going on. So what did he say before? And it wasn't what I said before. Shmuel said, we don't evaluate the carcass for a robber or a thief. And I say, even for a borrower. So who was saying the first line, if not you? What do you mean, I say? So the commentators explain. He's saying, the first thing he was saying what the prevalent custom was. See, point 16? Point 16 says, up to this point, Shmuel said the prevalent custom of the judges. He now adds his own view with respect to what the law should be concerning a borrower who must pay for an animal that was killed or an item that was broken while in his care. Now, a borrower is going to be, he's saying it is different or the same. We're not sure what he said, but let's think about it a minute. What should happen if I borrow something from you and I borrow a cow and the cow dies? Do I give you back or do I just give you the carcass?
No.
That's an issue. So he says, and I say, even a borrower as well. What does that mean? And I say, even a borrower well. In other words, the case of one who borrowed an item and became liable to pay for it. The wording of Shmuel's ruling concerning a borrower is somewhat ambiguous, for it's unclear whether he is ruling that we do evaluate or do not evaluate the carcass in this case. Gemara's going to clarify it in a minute. He says, and I say also by so. Also what? Also like a nizakin or also like thief? Thievery. It's not clear what he's saying. Again, look at his statement. We don't evaluate the carcass by a ganif and a gossip. Right? Only by damages. Okay? And I also say, also by a show. Also what? Also like damages or also like the ganif?
Right.
It's an ambiguous statement. A. B, and he says one more thing. The last point. Va'aba modali. And daddy agrees to me. Okay? And father agrees to me. Who is Abba? So that's a reference to the rabbi named Rav. Rav was called Abba. It was just Rebbe, whatever. So this is all Shmuel's statement. But again, Shmuel made three clauses. Shmuel says, we don't evaluate the carcass by theft, which the thief keeps the carcass finished, but the only time we evaluate and the damage he keeps it is by damages, clause one. And I say, and the same thing is by a borrower, we don't know what he means, what he's referring it to. And Abba agrees to that. So now, that's going to be the next question. Well, what do you mean by the borrower? What do you mean by the borrower? That's Gemara's next question. Will you please clarify? Ibalahu. So the rabbis ask, what are you talking about? Right? Hachi kamar. Is this what Shmuel meant to say? He's going to put both sides of the coin. Did he mean to say, af l'shoel, shamin. Even by a shoel, you evaluate. And therefore, the damagee gets the carcass, so it's just like damages. Is that what he meant to say? Va'aba modeli and Abba agrees to me? Oh, Dilmar, perhaps. Okay, Gamar, this is what he meant to say. Vani Omer, and I say, Af l'shol yinabarer, ein sham, you don't evaluate. And the guardian, the borrower has to keep the carcass and pay the whole thing. And that's what? V'Abba modali, and Abba agrees to me. So we're not sure what he meant over there. Point 19, according to this interpretation of Shmuel's statement, when he says that this ruling applies to a borrower as well, he means that we do not evaluate for a borrower just as we do not evaluate for a thief or a robber. Now we'd have to learn Tosas, you know, why he would say that. What's the logic for that? To treat him the same way, you could say he gets all the benefits, a shul gets all the benefits, so we give him a much harder time. Other shomrim don't have as much benefits as a shul. See, we're not talking about a shomer chinam, not a shomer sachar, that we haven't gotten into. But a shul, he's saying clear. So that's the question. What did he mean? What did he mean, also a borrower? What did he mean? We're not sure. So Gemara's going to try to bring a proof. Tashma, come in here. Here is the following story that happened that was brought before Rav. Remember, Shmuel says, an Abba, a Rav, agrees to me. So we'll see what Rav said in a real case. From what he says in a real case, it should be able to bring us a proof. What's going on over here? So what happened? A real case happened as following. The Hugard was a fellow, the Shol Narge Mechavre. He borrowed a borrower, that's what we want. He borrowed an axe from his friend. Okay, he's chopping away, and what happened? Tarmani broke the axe, and it was negligence. So now the question is, does he just give back the pieces and pay the difference? Or does he have to give him a brand new axe or the cash?
Does it matter that he's negligent?
Yeah, if it wasn't negligent, then it could be different. Shoal is putter on certain things. But that isn't so relevant for us right now. But it's a case where he has to pay. It's a case where he has to pay. Question says, does he just give him the pieces and pay the difference? Or does he give him the axe, another axe, or cash for it? So Asa Lakai made the Rav. They came before Rav, and Rav is the Abba that Shmuel's referring to. Says he agrees to me. So Amar Le, Rav says, da 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 da, Zil Shlim Le, Nargamalia, go compensate him a brand new axe. Give him a brand new axe, and you keep the pieces. So it seems when he said, and also a borrower, also borrower is like what? It's like a ganav. That he's got to give him a brand new one, and the loss goes, the carcass goes to the borrower. Don't we see from this? Shema mino, we hear from here. Ain't shema, we don't evaluate for the borrower, and we don't give the pieces and you pay the difference. He's got to pay the whole thing. That would seem to be a proof. It seems to be a pretty good proof. Gemara says, nope, because that's not the end of the story. You didn't bring the whole story. There's one more line to the story that you did not bring. Where it says, no, Adrav, the very opposite is going to be proved from this. Because right after he gave his ruling, some of his buddies disagreed with him. Mida Amr Ilei Rav Kahana Rav Asi. From the fact that the story continues, it's a Gemara and Bava Metzia. We have to bring the rest of the story. That Rav Kahana and Rav Asi said to Rav, after they heard Rav's ruling, they said to him, Dina Hochi, is this the law? Is this correct? That the guy's got to give the whole thing? And what was Rav's response? Did he fight him on that? No. Vishasik. And Rav was silent. Means he agreed that he was wrong. Silence was agreement. He made a ruling. Is this really the law?
Then he reevaluated it.
What do we see from that? Silence usually means agreement. Shmami no, we learned the opposite. Shami that we do evaluate. And that because since he was quiet, he realized, I guess I made a mistake, or I defer to your opinions or whatever. And now we do evaluate. He gives the pieces and he does it back. So let's look at 21 and 22. Sina Mukhiyosev, although silence in the face of a challenge is not always an indication of agreement, but can also be an indication that the question is not worth taking seriously. And they give an example of that in the brackets. See, for example, in this case, Gemara assumes that Rav is silent because he acceded to the view of the questioners. This is because Rav Kahana and Rav Asi were considered both disciples and peers of Rav, and he would not simply have dismissed their challenge without comment. Of necessity, then, his silence must be interpreted as acquiescence. Since he was quiet, we assume he agreed. And now, what do we see from this? Footnote 22. Rav Kahana, Rav Asi maintain that the borrower is not required to pay with the new axe. Rather, he'd only pay the difference between the value of the broken axe and its original value. They are of the opinion that a borrower is treated like a damager in this regard and not like a robber or thief. The Gemara thus rejects the proof advanced previously, for in fact, the very opposite proof can be brought from that incident. For Ravasi, if Rav acceded to the opinion of Rav Kahana Ravasi, then he was obviously of the opinion that we do evaluate for a borrower, and Shmuel's ruling too should be interpreted as stating this. Remember, Shmuel said, and so too with a borrower, and Abba says this. Now you see, Abba said he agreed to what his disciples questioned on him. He said, I guess we give him the pieces. So it comes out that a borrower is treated just like a damagee in terms of a case of damaging, and we give the pieces, and the shomer just pays the difference, and that is the halacha. Huh. So now let's just quickly look at the notes and review that fast. Hello? Central issue. Oop, I skipped. What did I do? No, I was right the first time. I'm sorry. It's the next one. Sorry. Okay. For whom do we evaluate the value of the carcass? Statement of Shmuel. We do not evaluate the value of a carcass towards required payment for thieves or robbers, only for damagers. My father and I say even for a borrower. Question of understanding. Does he mean even for a borrower we do evaluate or we do not? Answer from a story. A man borrowed an axe and broke it. Rav obligated him to pay the full value of an axe. This shows that we do not evaluate for borrowers. Rejection. To the contrary, Rav Kahana Rasi asked Rav if this was really the law, and Rav was silent. This shows that we do evaluate for borrowers. So guess what? I was a little fast on the gun. There's two more lines. Sorry. Itmar, it was stated. Just wrapping up. Omar Ula, Omar Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Ula said, in the name of Rabbi Lazar, he holds Shomin Laganif Agazlan. Look what he says. We evaluate for Ganif and Agazlan. He argues on Shmuel. We do evaluate. However, Rav Papi says, Ein Shomin, we do not evaluate. That's like Shmuel. Gemara's just telling you the opinions. And Gemara ends, the Hilchos of the law is very interesting, very rare. Gemara will tell you what the law is. Ein Shomin lo l'gan v'gazlan. We do not evaluate for Ganav and for a Gazlan. Aval l'shoel Shomin, but for a borrower we do evaluate. And who was that last like? Kidrav Kanravasi, who told Rav he made a mistake. So therefore, we come out, we hold like Shmuel. And Shmuel, the way he's understood from the story with Rav, the Rav Kahana Ravasi corrected him, and he agreed to it. So the way we concluded before is the way we conclude the same way. And that's the final part of the Gemara. 5. Statement of Ula, we evaluate for thieves or robbers. Statement of Papi, we do not evaluate for them. The halacha is we do not evaluate for them, but we do evaluate for a borrower like Rav Kahana and Ravasi, and that is the conclusion of the Gemara. So it comes out, for a damaged person, in a regular case of damages, we evaluate and you pay the difference. For robbers and thieves, we don't evaluate and pay the difference. And for a borrower, we do evaluate and pay the difference. And that is the final halacha that we have.
I can't see today's times. I go and I borrow an axe from you, and I come back and I give you the shattered axe in pieces and a few dollars to make up the difference.
As long as you can sell those shattered pieces. If you cannot sell the shattered pieces, it's of no value. Right?
Yeah.
But,
it makes sense.
Well, if you borrow a car.
But you're negligent.
Or you borrow a car. And I get into an accident.
This insurance covers it.
Let's say there's no insurance.
Then you should fix the car.
Well, I'm paying you the difference. That's all I do. I pay the difference. I don't have to give you a new car, do I?
What's that?
I don't have to give you a new car.
No, but you have the obligation to return it in the same shape.
So you have to pay for the damage.
I pay the difference. Okay, the next couple days are going to be totally non-Nazikin stuff. Once we made a statement in the name of one rabbi, the Gemara is going to throw in a bunch of statements in the name of that rabbi that have nothing to do with the current topic that we're on. It's going to be, every day is going to be like a new sugya. totally new sugya, not connected to the other one.
I noticed you didn't explain any of the rashis. Is that, it wasn't relevant?
The guys here are more on the level, you know, not that the rashis inside.
There's no English in the rashis anywhere?
There's no English rashi. But it's the commentary that basically will tell you most of the rashis in English.
So if you want to know what the rashi says...
Here, if you want rashi, I'll show you.
But you can't really understand the rashi from this...
Right, there's no rashi translation. You can get rashi to pop up.
Right. So what do you do if you don't understand the rashi?
Then you're stuck. Well, that's why you look at the art scroll.
The art scroll doesn't translate the rashi in English either.
But it'll give you many of rashi's comments, for example.
Yeah. That's a rashi. Rashi
he
says...
He puts it in brackets.
I see. So were the rashis relevant or not
here.
Really?
For example, this one.
According to this interpretation.
Blah, 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 blah. It's rashi.
I see.
Any rashi that's relevant to understanding the text, he will bring you the rashi there.
So if it's not, why is rashi writing it if it's not
sometimes
relevant?
Rashi will give you a grammatical thing, he'll give you other information. In other words, he's not going to translate every single rashi. But he'll give you every rashi that is relevant in understanding the Gemara.
What if you wanted the rashis just, you know, to see them? Is there a place where you can translate the rashis?
You want to see the rashi?
Like, how do you translate the rashis?
This one does not translate the rashi.
Is it a version of it?
I'm just trying to show you what you get.
Yeah, I saw the rashis popping up. I just wasn't sure what all the words were in some cases.
And he won't tell you. That far, this nobody has an English translation of Rashi on Gemara.
It's too difficult, or it's too succinct.
It's not. I don't know. It's a big job. I don't know.
Can you get a book that's a Rashi translation? No, doesn't exist.
You can get Chumash Rashi on Chumash translated. Yeah.